The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, send those comments to td@kpcg.fm. I want to thank everyone for sending in those messages during our 2-week youth camp. Lots of good feedback on some of the programming. A little bit of a different approach these past couple of weeks. Actually, one that was somewhat refreshing. I know I had the program early on at the start of camp there about those camps, those youth camps in Syria and Iraq, the ISIS youth camps, which was an appalling look inside of those terrorist training camps for little 10 and 11 year old boys in some cases. But then outside of that, I really didn't have as much time over the last couple of weeks to just get immersed into some of the latest as far as news events go. And it was just inspiring, of course, to focus more on the solution to the many problems that we see in this world today. And as we tried to tell our young people on more than one occasion, they represent part of that solution. An important part of it. Herbert Armstrong used to talk about how the young people are the most important group that we as educators and parents need to reach, because we are raising them to be leaders, the leaders of tomorrow. And when you look at the many problems of the world today, well, you just see a total lack of true leadership. You're seeing it right now in Milwaukee, the latest round of rioting, all of the chaos and the violence and looting, burning down gas stations and stores and things. It continued, started, I guess, Saturday night after the shooting of this time an armed black man. That started Saturday night's protests and rioting. And then it continued on through to last night as well, where you had, they were calling in reinforcements, the local authorities there. But here was this armed suspect who had stolen a semi-automatic pistol, and he wouldn't stop, he wouldn't lay down the weapon. He and his accomplice fled their vehicle, and then were chased by policemen. And the one that shot the suspect, of course, was a black policeman, but never mind that. It was obviously not racially motivated at all, but it still incited all of this violence, this looting, and calls for justice. You see it as an all-out attack on law enforcement. That's all that it is. And of course, there are those, of course, that are out there and that are stoking these fires, these flames, saying that it's racially motivated, saying that it's because of injustices in the justice system or because of racism in law enforcement. But like with so many others of these stories, this Sylville Smith, he was arrested and ticketed 9 times in the last 5 years. For what? Well, for shootings, for robberies, for carrying a concealed weapon, for theft, for possessing heroin. He had a long record, and yet he wasn't in jail for that long at all. If anything, the justice system was pretty easy on him until this past weekend. He had all these brushes with the law, and there he was, just out on the street, stealing weapons, running from the police. And then you see some of the news of those in the community, the reaction. The one young man who said the rich people, they got all the money, and They're not giving us any. And it's easy to look at that and to just say, well, what a ridiculous worldview this young protester, this young rioter has. Well, the rich people, they've got all the money and they don't give us none. But really, isn't he hearing that same message from many of the leaders in his community? Even some of the top political voices. Whether you consider the policies of President Obama or we're in campaign season, look at what Bernie Sanders was out there preaching. Injustice. It's unfair. The system, it's all rigged. And that's what so many of these uneducated, undisciplined protesters and rioters are out there saying. The rich people have all the money. We don't get any of it. And so we're just out here. We're looking for fairness, they say, as they burn down entire businesses that employ people in their community. It's been striking me a lot here of late. Well, particularly before the youth camp, as I've brought out before, just how timely these issues of the Trumpet magazine are. Each month, the latest, September 2016, the one that's just coming out right now, my father has an article in there from weeks ago. America faces an explosion of racial violence. And he talks about how that the president's been out there at the forefront of the protests. Not literally, but he's been out there. He's the leading voice of these protests, these movements. And he's there in the top office of the land, distorting facts, making all kinds of false accusations, targeting the police, convincing black communities that the local law enforcement is out to get them. And as my father brings out in that article, this is just in the latest Trumpet, America's on a very slippery slope. And it's leading to all-out race war. Look at what it takes now to put a community up in flames. It takes a black officer shooting a black suspect who had stolen an automatic weapon and that wasn't going to submit, wasn't going to stop running, wasn't going to lay down his weapon. And that's all it takes for the protesting and for the looting and for the violence to carry on now for, 48 hours in the city of Milwaukee. In that article, my father's article, America faces an explosion of racial violence. He goes through Isaiah 1, which we've gone through so many times, it seems, this summer even. The whole head is sick, Isaiah said. The whole power structure. Of course, the power structure is largely white. But it's sick. There's a sickness there. There's a faintness. It says the whole heart is faint. So the leaders don't have the will. They don't have the strength to really look at root causes. They don't have the will to face reality. Verse 6 in Isaiah 1 says, for the sole of the foot, even unto the head, there's no soundness in it, but wounds, bruises, and putrefying sores. It says they've not been closed, neither bound up, neither mollified with ointment. It says your country is desolate. This is verse 7. Your cities are burned with fire. Your land, strangers, devoured in your presence. And it's desolate, it says, as overthrown by strangers. So cities burning down and strangers devouring it in our presence. My father said in this article from the latest Trumpet, because these nations of Israel, mainly America and Britain, are laden with sin, and because of the weakness of our leaders, we will experience desolation and burning, all at the hands of strangers. It says, in other words, race-related violence is going to get much worse. It is going to worsen. Now, as he says there in the conclusion of his piece, there is hope for those who turn to God. There is hope for those who look to God. There is hope for those who place their faith in God. Obviously, God doesn't want to see people suffer. He doesn't want to see mankind go through these calamities that are prophesied. My father brings all of this out right there at the end of his piece. And the other positive takeaway from all of this is it's prophesied to happen right before the return of Christ. Only Jesus Christ can end racism and injustice. Only Jesus Christ can solve these problems. You look at some of the footage. You look at the reaction in the black community. This again, after a black officer shoots a black armed suspect. You look at the reaction of that suspect's brother, or at least it was an individual who said he was his brother or related somehow. The rage, the emotion, the hatred, and of course you can understand the emotion. But to get up and act like his dead brother is now a saint. It's the same story as the gentle giant in Ferguson. We remember those lies well as well. And yet look at the behavior. Look at the resistance to arrest. Look at the unwillingness to submit. Look at the fatherlessness. Look at the community. There's no doubting that the community is broken down. And it's been brought on largely by the family breakdown, by divorce, by fatherlessness. And the solution certainly is not to turn and attack the police. They, as I've said before, they're like the last line of defense. You take away that line of defense and you're left with nothing to prevent just total anarchy. And of course, when you think about Isaiah 1 and other prophecies, Ezekiel 5, what's prophesied to happen? Like my father says, I mean, the attack on the police is only going to get much worse. I mean, this is just the very beginning stages. But what's important to point out each time, as we try to do here, is look at how little it takes for a full-scale eruption to explode in our faces. And then the media is there helpfully egging it on. We've seen this story, as I say, play out so many times before. Yesterday, the New York Times had a piece about President Obama's many executive actions. And here again, when you think about the timeliness of the Philadelphia Trumpet magazine, we've been talking about this quite a lot, just this year even, including in the most recent, well, I guess it's now a month old, America's Real Enemy, a powerful article that my father wrote for the August 2016 Trumpet issue. But here in the New York Times yesterday, this is President Obama's lead. Well, it's the main cheerleader in the news media. It says here, once skeptical of executive power, Obama has come to embrace it. Well, he was supposedly skeptical of this before. Now he's fully embraced it. And in a few months, he'll be leaving the White House as one of the most prolific authors of major regulations in presidential history. That's the New York Times. That's not me. That's not the Trumpet. That's the New York Times. Talking about all of these executive actions. Talking about this massive overreach of executive authority. The Times says, in nearly 8 years in office, President Obama has sought to reshape the nation with a sweeping assertion of executive authority and a canon of regulations that have inserted the United States government more deeply into American life. I mean, that's just an astounding statement in itself. It's right there at the lead of the New York Times yesterday, the Sunday paper. Sunday morning, front page. Here is a president that's reshaping the nation. Just as he promised to do, by the way. fundamentally transform the United States. I don't think this was a president who maybe was skeptical of executive power at the start. This was something he had his sights set on from the beginning. We're just days away, you remember him saying, of fundamentally transforming the United States of America. And now here we are, 7.5 years into it. And as the Times is noting here, he's reshaped the nation. Sweeping executive authority. A canon of regulations. It says, once a presidential candidate with deep misgivings about executive power, well, again, I don't agree with that part of it. It says, though, Mr. Obama will leave the White House as one of the most prolific authors of major regulations in presidential history. In presidential history. Now, my father in that article, America's Real Enemy, he talked about at the start of that article about how the Obama administration has undermined America's power abroad, just as it has amassed power here at home or in the United States. And as he brings out, it's not like that's a contradictory strategy. It's two sides of the same coin. Undermining America's power and influence abroad, and then amassing all of this power at home. It says here, the New York Times does, blocked for most of his presidency by Congress. Here again, that's not true either. I mean, when has Congress in the last 7.5 years blocked this president? When has Congress blocked his agenda? That's largely why the Trump movement has gained so much momentum over the last year, because there's so many people on the Republican side that are just disgusted with how weak the Republicans have been, how that the Republicans haven't challenged anything of note. In any event, the Times goes on and says, Mr. Obama has sought to act however he could. In the process, he created a kind of government neither he nor the Republicans wanted. Is that true? He didn't want this. He's only doing it as a last resort. One that depended on bureaucratic bulldozing rather than legislative transparency. Let me read that last bit again. This is the New York Times. This is the New York Times commenting on the last 7.5 years. This administration saying that it's depended on bureaucratic bulldozing rather than legislative transparency. You'll recall coming in, this president promised that his would be the most transparent administration in history. Here, at least, the New York Times acknowledges that's not the case. That certainly didn't happen. Here's the New York Times saying it's bulldozing its way through. It says here, but once Mr. Obama got the taste for it, he pursued his executive power without apology and in ways that will shape the presidency for decades to come. Well, it's opened a can of worms, evidently. The Obama administration, in its first 7 years, finalized 560 major regulations, those classified by the Congressional Budget Office as having particularly significant economic or social impacts. That was nearly 50% more than the George W. Bush administration. It was easy during the campaign season, wasn't it, for Senator Obama and so many others on the left to decry all the actions of President Bush following 9/11 in particular, this great executive power grab on the part of the Bush administration. And here we are now, 50% more than George W. Bush. It says here, an army of lawyers working under Mr. Obama's authority has sought to restructure the nation's healthcare and financial industries, limit pollution, bolster workplace protections, and extend equal rights to minorities. It says, and it's imposed billions of dollars in new costs on businesses and consumers. Hundreds and hundreds of new regulations, billions of dollars in new costs on businesses and consumers. brought on by this army of lawyers. That makes me think of another Trumpet article from years ago. The rule of lawyers. That's what it's come down to now. Get your army of lawyers together and just go to work, fundamentally transforming the nation, bulldozing your way through. It says in the New York Times here, many of the new rules are little known, even as they affect the way Americans eat, love, and die. It's amazing. It's in its final year, the administration is enacting some of its most ambitious rules, it says here, finally. History may now judge the regulations to be one of Mr. Obama's most enduring legacies. That may be his most enduring legacy. All of these rules and regulations that he's imposed upon the American people by executive action in that August 2016 piece. My father there explained how that, you know, he's substituted this executive action term for executive orders to make it more difficult for Congress and others to challenge him, to challenge his authority. It says, unlike executive orders, which are issued as, this is my father's article, unlike executive orders, which are issued as an official catalog transcript, executive actions are informal orders from the president to his underlings in the executive branch, making them more difficult to challenge legally and making it easier for him to trash the Constitution, the supreme law of the land. As my father brings out there, it's all about lawlessness. It's all about getting around the Constitution. It's all about getting around Congress. He says there's an unparalleled spirit of lawlessness here today, and it's leading to an outcome far worse than most people realize. And my father ties it in with the social unrest in many of our cities, and how that this administration is stirring it up. And he says here at the end of his piece, or in the middle, it says that that is the path to a violent dictator ruling America, and it wouldn't take but a few large and destructive riots to reach that nightmare. We're going to have to brace ourselves for these next few critical months. Here we're coming down to the last 3 months or so of the political campaign for president. And then we just keep having these explosions of violence. The latest round, as I said at the start, in Milwaukee. We'll need to come back to this statement frequently. It wouldn't take but a few large and destructive riots to reach that nightmare. What nightmare? Well, one that has a violent dictator ruling in America, of all places. If you think that that can't happen or something like that can't happen, you need to open your eyes to what's already happening. The New York Times brought it out pretty well yesterday. 560 major regulations. All these investigations into police departments, Milwaukee being one of them. And, of course, what is the Department of Justice finding out in each case? Going in with the agenda that it does. What does it find out? Inevitably, oh, there's problems. Yeah, we suspected it. There's lots of problems. There's lots of racism. And it just stirs up the black community. And you see it in the protests. You see it in the interviews. You see the hatred. You see the willingness to resort to violence. You see groups out there like Black Lives Matter and the Black Panther Party leading the way, calling for a revolution, calling for war, calling for race war. There were quite a few other stories about that. With respect to Milwaukee, this latest round, I won't take time to go through all of them. But when you think about, again, what we just experienced here at Edstone, we finished youth camp yesterday. Today is the first day of orientation for Armstrong College, the college classes. And as I tried to bring out to the campers last week, what a contrast. When you compare what's happening in this world, and in particular, what's happening in the community of young people, what's happening on college campuses today, what's happening in the inner cities of America, and you compare that with what is happening in God's true church. And just getting ready for my orientation lecture later today, you think about what this modern system of education believes about human nature, the fact that, well, it's basically a good thing. And so even though this suspect that was killed by a black police officer, even though he had this unbelievably long rap sheet with drugs and robbery and violence, you have the relative right in front of the TV camera talking about how good he was, talking about how he loved peace, talking about how that, well, he may have been photographed with the gun once, but you know, nobody thinks anything of a white hunter who's carrying a gun. That was his reasoning. Well, he was just a saint. And no one there in the media is prepared to challenge it. That says a lot about human nature, where it just wants to be perceived as good or wants to appear as good, but refuses to do good. Read Jeremiah 17 and verse 9, what it says about the deceitful heart of man. And if that heart isn't reformed for the better with God's truth, with the help of God's Spirit, by true education, well, look at what happens to our society. Look at what happens to our cities. Look at what happens to our families. Human nature sure likes to be thought of as good. But the simple fact is, in so many of these cases that happen over and over again, if these young men were out there doing good, they'd never have these run-ins with the police in the first place. That's the truth that no one will speak, because we want to hear smooth things and we want to blame government. We want to blame law enforcement. We want to blame the authorities. Look at what Paul had to say in Romans 7 about his human nature. And this was a man working out there serving God, led of the Spirit. And yet he said quite simply that there is nothing good in me, that's for sure. And he cried out to God, who's going to deliver me? Who's going to deliver this wretchedness, this wretched man that I am? It's only by the power of God's Spirit. It's only by true education. And of course, true education involves God's law and government. It involves discipline. Here again, when you look at that article, America's Real Enemy, My Father's Peace, from the August issue, he talks about, well, some of these things I just brought out with the human heart. And then the fact that, as Revelation 12 brings out, Satan has been cast down to this earth, and that this earth is deceived. Well, as I say, it leads into some good news eventually, but before that, we can expect the situation in America's cities to get much worse. I should also mention that we've worked these past few months to update and expand my father's most popular booklet, America Under Attack, to where it's now up over 100 pages, I believe. And that booklet will be coming out in the weeks ahead, so we'll look forward to telling you when that new publication is available. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Don't forget to email us as the week unfolds. We're here at the start of another week. Send us your comments, your feedback. Send those comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Freedom is one of the most sought-after ideals in human history. Man's search for freedom has taken him into the fiercest of protests, struggles, revolutions, civil wars, and even world wars. Today, in the midst of free societies, many continue to fight for what they perceive as ever greater freedoms. And yet, many of these same people are actively fighting against law. Few people understand that this war against law actually undermines true freedom. To learn more, request Gerald Fleury's booklet, No Freedom Without Law. In this free booklet, you will see what the Bible says about the latter-day spirit of rebellion and lawlessness that is now so common in our nations today. Also request America Under Attack. In this booklet, you will learn more about the spirit behind this attack on law. You'll see where this is leading. Both booklets are offered freely at no cost or obligation to you. Request No Freedom Without Law and America Under Attack. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily Radio Show airs every morning at 7 a.m. Central Time on KPCG 101.3 FM in Edmond, Oklahoma.
Well, as I mentioned there before the break, we tried to just help the campers last week to see the stark contrast between what's happening in the world that they live in and what's happening at these youth programs that God has established. Satan, as I mentioned there before the break, he's been cast down. He's confined to this earth. You can read there in Revelation 12, verses 7 and 8. He's deceived the whole world, it says in verse 9. And then if you read verse 12, you see how the devil is well aware of time. It says, "Woe to the inhabitants of the earth and of the sea, for the devil is come down unto you, you inhabitants of the earth. And he has great wrath," it says, "because he knows that he has but a short time." There's a time limit on Satan the devil's reign. There's a time limit. And he's well aware of how short his time is, which is why he's filled with wrath. He's the god of this world, it says in 2 Corinthians 4:4. And this is the world that we are called out of, assuming we respond to that call, John 6:44. It's the world that we're to come out. Come out of it, Jesus said. Don't be a partaker of its evil deeds. Don't love the world or the things of this world, John said in 1 John 2. This is what we're to come out of. This is what our young people have to come out of. And that's a challenge because Satan, of course, makes everything about this materialistic society seem to be, like it's a wonderful thing. He's filled this world with a glittering array of all of these alluring and sensually appealing diversions and distractions and material things. And if we're not careful, if our young people aren't careful, It'll devour their time. It'll devour them. And so these programs that we have for the youth, whether for the campers that come to the summer programs or the summer camps, or the ones who are being educated the right way, who are being given a true education from God, they're crucial because they all represent part of the solution to the many problems that we see in this world today. Last week I played this soundbite from Herbert Armstrong. This is from his TV program back in 1985. I may have played this on radio in the recent weeks as well. In any event, here's what Mr. Armstrong had to say in 1985.
The reason for all of the troubles in the world could be stated in just two words: human nature. And human nature is an acquired type of attitude and intention of mind. We were not born with human nature. We acquired it after we were born. The best hope that we humans have of bringing world peace does not come just alone from our efforts as adults, but is going to come through the training of little children before they acquire this human nature, and teaching them to be generous and to give. So I am so happy that our foundations are joining hands together to work not only for world peace, but also to promote everything we can for the teaching and the training and culture of little children.
He was talking there about some of the projects that his church was involved in internationally to develop and work along to develop youth programs, to work alongside children, to give students at Ambassador College opportunities to teach young people. And when you look at the basic cause, this goes back to those scriptures I paraphrased in the first segment, the cause of the world troubles, human nature, Jeremiah 17:9, Romans 8:7. And this attitude that we acquire soon after birth, who do we acquire it from? Satan the devil. How? Ephesians 2:2, he broadcasts. He broadcasts in attitudes, moods, impulses. That's what we acquire soon after birth. And without true education, without any form of discipline and structure as a youth, without the leadership of a strong father, strong role model, what happens? Well, you're seeing it happen. You're seeing it happen out on the streets of America. You remove all discipline and structure and order. And of course, we've been told to do this not just in the past few years. I mean, this has been an ongoing thing for decades. The breakdown of law and order, the breakdown of discipline in education. What is the solution? Well, it all comes down to training little children, even before they acquire this human nature, and teaching them how to give, teach them how to serve, teach them how to get their minds off of themselves, teach them how to build up the community, not tear it down, not burn it down. Well, Mr. Armstrong, in the last years of his life, particularly from 1978 or 9, through to his death in 1986, he was regularly emphasizing the importance of those summer youth programs, the YOU program, as he called it, Youth Opportunities United, the educational programs, anything and everything that he could promote that had to do with teaching and training little children. He tried to help the supporters of his work to understand just how important that part of God's work really and truly is. He even said that of all the people that we can reach, the young people in our very own church are by far the most important group. That's because that's where the solution to the world's problems begins. It begins in the home. And he also explained in the 1980s that those young people in God's church, they're the leaders of tomorrow. That's what this world needs. Future leaders who've been brought up the right way. True education. Hosea chapter 4 here, verse 1, we went through this a few weeks ago, but in any event, it says, "Hear the word of the Eternal, you children of Israel, for the Lord has a controversy with the inhabitants of the land, because there's no truth, nor mercy, nor knowledge of God in the land." God has a controversy with our peoples because his knowledge, the knowledge of God, has disappeared. The world, spiritually speaking, is in darkness. And so what happens when you kick God out? Well, verse 2 says, by swearing and lying and killing and stealing and committing adultery, they break out and blood touches blood. Well, you take away God and his knowledge, you take away God's truth, you take away the laws of God, and what are you left with? Stealing, killing, lying, swearing, committing adultery. And you could add to that, then people rushing to the defense of those who commit these kinds of acts, and saying, well, but he was a good person. He was a good person. He was filled with love. He had every kind of good intention. And that's the way human nature is. It wants to be thought of as good. It wants to appear as good. It doesn't want to do good, however. And so the world is filled with violence, just like it was in the days before the flood. Read about it in Genesis 6. God's assessment was that it was full of violence and that the hearts and minds of men were on evil continually. That was God's assessment. Now, those people living and bringing all that evil and violence into the antediluvian world, do you think they looked at themselves and thought, well, we're so evil and violent? Of course not. Of course not. They thought, you know what, we're pretty good. We're pretty sophisticated. I like the system of education that we have in place. I like our big cities. I like how much progress we're making. They said the same kinds of things that you hear people saying today. It's never been better. We have the best of it all. God says, my people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. Because you have rejected knowledge, I will also reject you. And you shall be no priest to me. Seeing that you have forgotten the law of God, I will also forget your children. See, when we forget God's law, God forgets us. This is the most precious knowledge there is, because it's of God, but it's also the most dangerous knowledge there is. Because if you reject it, if you forget about it, then God forgets you, and you're on your own. Verse 7 says, as they were increased, so they sinned against me, therefore will I change their glory into shame. As they were increased, they multiplied. Their society, their civilization expanded, but so did their sins. And that's what we're seeing today. As they grew and multiplied, so did they grow and multiply in their sins. So they sinned against me, it says in Hosea 4:7. The solution? Well, it starts in the home. It's a mustard seed beginning for sure. As I told you a week or two ago, our little camp, just 36 campers, not very big at all. But it represents a beginning. Mr. Armstrong wrote in 1985, "Nothing in this material world is as important as a happy home life with father, mother, and well-taught, happy children, a close-knit family." Why, he asked? Well, because it strikes at the very heart and core of humanity's future and eternity and the gospel that Jesus Christ proclaimed. You see the solution here? When Jesus Christ came into Galilee preaching the gospel of the kingdom of God, what was that gospel about? What is the kingdom of God? God's kingdom is his family administering his government over all the earth. Government based on law. Law and order. Starting with the family. Continuing on through a godly system of education. And perhaps after that, some specialized training of some sort. But all of it based on God's knowledge. All of it based on the revealed truth of the Bible. You veer away from that, and it won't work. You have a system of education without that foundation, and all it leads to is multiplied evil, violence, suffering. Look at Psalm 127 and notice this with respect to God's family. Of course, it's good to apply this with our own physical families too. But think about the family or the house that God is building. Psalm 127 and verse 1, it says, "Except the Lord build the house, they labor in vain that build it. Except the Lord keep the city, the watchman wakes, but in vain." God is a family builder. And if we'll let him into our lives, if we'll let him build our families his way, then we can learn how to be happy and joyous and have a peaceful home and peaceful homes, orderly homes, homes where there's structure and discipline. Those kinds of homes, those kinds of families lead to a peaceful, orderly, structured community. It all starts in the home. Doesn't it? That's where it begins. It says in verse 3, "Lo, children are an heritage of the Lord, and the fruit of the womb is his reward." What a blessing children are, little children. All of these thugs who are out there breaking down society, they were little infants once. Helpless. And we're helpless without parental structure, without parental involvement, without nurturing from the mother, and instruction and teaching and direction from the father. Take that away, and that's why so many of those little infants turn into what we're now seeing, roaming the streets of Milwaukee and St. Louis and Baltimore and Detroit, in Dallas and Houston, Baton Rouge. When Jesus Christ returns to this earth, it all starts with a marriage, doesn't it? The bride will have made herself ready with God's help and power. The marriage takes place, and then children. Children all over the earth can be worked with, taught, trained, prepared. Just like Mr. Armstrong brought out in that soundbite. It all starts with little children. And spiritually speaking, that's what we all are. That's how we make it into God's kingdom, it says in the Gospels. Jesus said that. Except you become, or unless you become as little children. Teachable little children who look to the Father, who look to the parents. It says here in verse 4, as arrows are in the hand of the mighty man, so are children of the youth. Happy is the man that has his quiver full of them. They shall not be ashamed, but they shall speak with the enemies in the gate. Children are precious, a precious, priceless gift from God, from Almighty God. What a shame that more and more parents today, what a shame that more fathers don't really understand how precious those children are, how miraculous childbirth is. What a shame that more parents don't give God thanks for these precious gifts and then train them up in the way that they should go, like it says in Proverbs 22. The next psalm, Psalm 128, it says here in verse 1, "Blessed is everyone that fears the Eternal, that walks in His ways. For you shall eat the labor of your hands. Happy shall you be." It all starts with fearing God, doesn't it? That's true education. That's disciplined instruction. "Happy shall you be, and it shall be well with you. Your wife shall be as a fruitful vine by the sides of your house. Your children like olive plants round about the table. Behold, that thus shall the man be blessed that fears the Eternal." That's quite different, that family arrangement, from what's described in Isaiah 3, a prophecy about our society today. Here is described a God-fearing family. A man who's blessed by the Eternal, who fears God, whose wife is a fruitful vine, whose children are like olive plants around the table. And that's the way the family is going to be organized in the wonderful world tomorrow. The solution to today's problems, the solution to all of the problems of our world, it comes back to education. That starts in the home. That system, as it continues on through the more formal education that just reinforces and expands upon what children receive from God-fearing parents, that system, as small as it is, that system of tomorrow. Tomorrow's education, as I told the campers last week, it's already here. It's already here. The educational system of the wonderful world tomorrow, it's right here on this earth. The mustard seed is there. Mr. Armstrong said in 1984, this is also from a sermon, he said, "When the new world comes, the world tomorrow, we're not going to just have all the perfect utopia that we think about and talk about immediately." And we think about it and talk about it, of course, because it's in one prophecy after another. But as he brings out here, it's not going to happen with the snap of a finger to go from a world full of evil and violence to a perfect Garden of Eden utopia. He said it's going to take time, and it's going to have to start with the little tots and with the children, with the youth and the young people. And by the time they grow up, we're really going to have utopia. But we're going to have to start while they're young. He went on to talk about, or gave the example in that sermon, of a little child, more of an adult, an accomplished pianist. And how that in every case, you see that. A brilliant 25-year-old musician. How early did they start? Well, a lot of them started when they're 6, 7, 8 years of age. Some younger than that even. And look at where they are. 10, 15, 20 years in. Even still, as youths. Young adults. He said in that message, if you are going to live the kind of life you ought to live, And if you're going to be the kind that God wants us to be, and the kind that will bring happiness, peace, prosperity, everything good and everything we want to this earth, we're going to have to start at the beginning. You see, start with the little ones. Start with the young ones. That's why these youth programs are so incredibly important. They're crucial. It does start incredibly small, just like the mustard seed, as Jesus said. But look at what happens over time. After one generation, or the Bible even talks about what happens after, finally, after the third or fourth generation into the world tomorrow. Think about that mustard seed that's here today. It's already here. And where it will be one generation from now, and two generations, and then three generations. You think of it like that, and you see that the solution is in place. Human nature is the cause of all the evils of this world. And the solution, the way to correct this problem, is to teach and to train little children, God's children. And in a godly household, like described here in Psalm 128, the little children of that blessed union, family. It's a God family vision. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Email us if you'd like, td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today. We'll see you tomorrow.